WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth,
Charlie Baker.
You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome and good evening. You are tuned into Monday Night Talk, and... The rumors are true. I am Kevin Tachi. I will host the show until 8 p.m. this evening. And we have, as usually, we set a course for a great program. We'll start after we do our traffic check. We'll start things off with the State House report. Joining us is State Representative Josh Cutler. And we have a cornucopia of topics to talk about. Anything from workforce development to any updates regarding unemployment insurance. This is a commission that he actually chairs. I'll talk a little bit of the Future of Work Commission. I guess it's going to be visiting Plymouth this week. We'll talk with him about that. And did you know that this week is Energy Efficient Day? We'll talk a little bit about that. That's coming up in just a few moments. Following the state representative, we have Plymouth County Sheriff Joe McDonald. And Joe is going to come on in and chat with us about a job fair, which is going to be fantastic. That's going to be taking place October 16th. I think that's a Saturday. I could be wrong. Let me check my sources here. I think it's a Saturday. It feels like a Saturday from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. If you're not doing anything, if you would like a career in corrections... That's right. This job fair is for you. And I am not supporting any candidates who are... No, kidding. So we're going to look forward to talking to the sheriff about that. And always, when the sheriff comes in, we just like to get caught up with what's going on within his particular department. Hour number two. Brockton Mayor Robert Sullivan will be joining us. And unfortunately, we're going to have to start off on a somber note as... City of Champions loses another. Hank Tartaglia. Hank actually was the chairman of the Licensing Commission, but he was far more than that. His family goes back to when Rocky Marciano was champion, and his uncle Snaps was one of Rocky's cornermen. And Hank, of course, and his brother Charlie, his brother Lou... well-known in and around the city for a lot of things that they used to do. Hank also used to do a radio program. It was a Tartaglia and Marciano, where Hank Tartaglia and Peter Marciano, that's the son of, it's a nephew of Rocky's, used to do a sports talk show on the former WBET 1460 AM, and which is now owned by... it's part of the WATD family, and you know it now as WBMS, serving the great Brockton Metro South. And then finally, we're going to bring in Jared Valenzuela as we're going to do a TV segment. No, not like you're watching TV, but Tachi and Valenzuela. And we're going to talk a little bit about the football game, as we both were at the game. Unbeknownst to me, he was actually a level down from me at the football stadium last night. We'll talk about that. We were scheduled to have Pete Shepard. Remember Pete the Meat Shepard from WEEI, who is now, he's part of, he co-hosts Sheeman and Shepard Pete just sent me a text message, actually sent me a message through Facebook. And those of you who have been upset that Facebook has been down, I believe that they finally found the power switch and have turned it back on. So if you've missed a lot of DMs or you've missed a lot of messages, they have found the switch for Facebook and it is back on. So that and much more. But we're going to talk a little bit about the Patriots game. What was it like? What was the atmosphere like surrounding the hoopla? This whole thing that was billed as Tom Brady's return to the stadium that he built, Gillette Stadium, as he taking on his former coach, Bill Belichick, the hooded one. And I will tell you, it was indeed a fantastic game to be at. You know what I should do is just kind of tease a little bit, because my guest for the State House Report is here, State Rep Josh Cutler, serving the 6th Plymouth District. Now, what part of the 6th Plymouth District were you in to watch the game last night?
I was home, Kevin. I apparently wasn't one of the fortunate few that got to attend in person. I'm very impressed, though.
Well, I was able to take my stepson, and we had a good time. It was his very first football game, and why not pick one that is part of history here in the Boston area?
So my son and I were at the last...
Charlie.
We're at the last Tom Brady game in Foxborough Stadium during the regular season. So that's the best I can do.
Charlie's like in his first year of college now, isn't he?
No, he's in ninth grade.
Okay. Yeah. Same thing, though.
So let me ask you, what did you think about the decision to go for the field goal in the last play there? I was a little bit on it.
He had 55 ticks on the clock.
Yeah.
Okay. I would have chanced it and went for 4th and 3. You know, what you could have done. Now, the Patriots had one timeout.
Right.
I'm burning banter for 7:30, but I'm doing it with you because you're a great guy.
This counts.
it does count. The thought is that I would have tried to draw him offsides.
That never works, though. I agree with you, but when's the last time that worked?
I don't know. It's a good question.
I was disappointed. I mean, I guess
we'll
second-guessing is the nature of Monday morning quarterback, but I should have gone for it.
Okay, we'll ask more questions in a moment, but right now it is time for us to turn our attention to the roadways one final time today, being brought to you on this end by Brennan's Smoke Shop, online at brennansmokeshop.com. There are many locations: Plymouth, Brockton, Pembroke, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, New Bedford, Weymouth, and now Hudson, New Hampshire. To give us the final glance at the roadways, Lisa DeMilo joins us. Lisa, how are things looking out there?
Well, Kevin, we're still seeing heavy volume leaving the city on the expressway southbound down to the on-ramp from Freeport Street. Then you hit the brakes from Furnace Brook to the split, northbound slow from the Braintree split to Freeport Street. Route 3 south, spotty delays from the expressway to Route 18. 93 is moving along either way between Braintree and Canton. And Route 24 south, pockets of congestion from 93 to Route 27 and from 495 to Route 140. This report is sponsored by UPSJobs.com. UPS is hiring warehouse workers near you. Apply at UPSJobs.com/shift. That's UPSJobs.com/shift. Make the shift, make a difference. Traffic on the nines every morning. I'm Lisa DeMilo in the WATD Traffic Center.
Hey, it's Jeff from Brennan's Smoke Shop. Opened in New Hampshire. It's going really good. Really good. But everybody and their mothers, sisters, brothers, aunts, uncles, cousins, friends wants me to bring them tax-free tobacco to Massachusetts from New Hampshire. Me! Please. I'm going to have to apologize if you or anyone else, and there's a lot of you, like $1 billion worth, want tax-free tobacco. You're just going to have to make the really not too long of a ride to Brennan's Smoke Shop, and really happy that we're there. Hudson, tax-free New Hampshire. Route 3 North, exit 88 to 3A North, just over the lovely New Hampshire border. Brennan's Smoke Shop, the best smoke shop in New Hampshire. Customers must be 21 years of age or older, and proper ID is required.
Back. first segment of the evening, State House Report, the staple of this radio program. This is an opportunity for us to talk with legislators, constitutional officers who are up at Beacon Hill, and we have a fantastic rapport with many of the folks who are elected, state senators, state representatives, and governor, lieutenant governor, you name it. We've had them on the radio program, and we're just fortunate that they come in and give us updates and provide transparency. This week, it's State Representative Josh Cutler.
Good evening.
Stopping on by. Before we kind of get into the meat and potatoes, did I hear a dirty rumor that you actually have a new book out?
I do. Well, soon, November 8th.
Oh.
In fact, I don't want to wreck my appearance on WATD that's coming up soon, but I will be on.
Is that on the South Shore Morning News with Rob Hackler?
I will be coming on in the near future to talk about the book. But yeah, a new book about the Boston Abolitionists Riot of 1835, which features Maria Chapman of Weymouth fame.
You're such a student of history.
I dabble.
No, but this is your second book.
Yes.
Apprise folks of the first one that
you
did.
The first one was called Mobtown Massacre, about Alexander Hanson and the Baltimore newspaper war of 1812. It had to do with the namesake for the town of Hanson and what a colorful character he was.
I love it. I mean, how does it feel to have the name? I mean, you have so many titles, but to have author next to your name.
That's pretty cool. You know, the fun part was last year, maybe it was a year and a half ago, I got an award for the book from the Baltimore Historical Society, and they called me a scholar, which is, you know, stretching it, number one. But that was kind of a cool title. So a history scholar. I'm going to throw that on my resume.
So before you know it, we'll lose you the speaking engagement.
Yeah, I know. I'm not a scholar, but it was nice thought.
Well, we have you here, as I said, to try to bring us up to date on some of the things that you're working on, some of the things in the works, or even let folks to mark their calendars for events that are in the works. Talk to us a little bit about Visit to Plymouth this week.
We were just talking about the Patriots, and we all know do your job was sort of the mantra of the Patriots, although they didn't fully do their job last night, but I'll look on the bright side. I think Mac Jones looked really good. And
what would you have done? What would you have done?
Monday morning quarterback, of course. I would have gone for it on fourth. I think Mac Jones was you know, he was being very effective with the little dips and dumps in the short game, and I think would have given him a chance to do that. But you know, that's why we call him Monday morning quarterback.
This kid actually set either tied a record or broke a record. 19 consecutive passes in a row.
Looks good. So the future looks good, but we just got to get through the present, I guess. But so my segue, Kevin, was do your job. You know, the Patriots, of course. Yes. And one of the things we've been trying to work on in the legislature, and specifically me, is a new commission that was established by the legislature on the future of work. And, you know, we all, that means many things to many people, but as we are, you know, emerging from the pandemic and kind of reevaluating the nature of work and how we work and where we work and all those weighty matters that go along with that, the legislature has authorized a commission, a 17-member commission, to take a deep dive on some of these issues, you know, the nature of policy in Massachusetts as it relates to employment, the present and future state of the workforce in Massachusetts, services like wraparound services like transportation, broadband, remote work, and childcare, and how those fit into the sort of the paradigm of the changing workplace. And so we've had our commission. We have a very distinguished commission, 17 members, including some other legislators, but also stakeholders in a variety of roles, leaders in the business community and labor as well. And we've had a series of meetings. The first two are virtual. The last one was up at the MIT Media Labs, which was really a neat. That's my first visit there. It was really a neat place to visit. But the next meeting, is coming up next week here on the South Shore in Plymouth. And we're really pleased to be hosting, bringing the commission down here to the South Shore, to our neck of the woods, to ATD land, to have an opportunity. We're going to be at Plymouth Town Hall, and we have a distinguished group of speakers who are going to present to the commission. And we're going to have a panel on workforce training, and we'll have a good discussion. It's all going to be streamed live by PAC-TV. Online, and should be really, you know, I'm really proud to be able to bring the commission. I'm the co-chair of the commission, and Representative Kathy Lenatra is also a member of our commission. So we're really pleased, Representative Lenatra and I, to bring the commission, the statewide focus here to the South Shore to kind of take a look and show off the best of the South Shore, we hope. So,
what have you been able to collect for data from your previous meetings. Again, they were virtual, but I'm sure you were able to glean some information from those meetings.
Yeah, we've had a really good, diverse group of presenters. One of our first meetings, we heard from former Governor Deval Patrick. We heard from a UMass professor of labor and workforce studies. We heard from a robotics professor. We heard about a new photonics technician program at Bridgewater State University. We heard about some of the challenges that people who are in community college are facing. You know, when it comes to if you can't get to work or if you can't find childcare, you know, it makes it very hard to reenter the workforce or to upskill your talents. So we heard from the president of Holyoke Community College. So we're trying to take to really listen to a diverse group of stakeholders, Kevin, and hear, you know, what are the challenges that people are facing? What are, you know, what's the good? What's the bad? So we can kind of package all of that and come up with some recommendations for ways that Massachusetts can impact policy moving forward. So we have for this coming Plymouth meeting, we have the president of Bridgewater State University who's going to come testify about Fred Clark himself, yeah. Mm-hmm. A really intriguing program that they have on cybersecurity, which is something that we all are thinking more about these days. We have former Senate President Therese Murray who's going to be joining us to talk about her experiences. She you know, is a leader in this area for many, many years. And we have some other folks as well. We have actually, I know one of your guests is Sheriff McDonald coming on after me. We're actually going to have someone from Massasoit who's going to talk about a prisoner reentry program that we have here in Massachusetts that's teaching inmates, former inmates who are coming out of the House of Correction, including Plymouth County House of Correction, and teaching them about diesel mechanic skills so that they can succeed in the workforce, because we want to make sure we're, you know, doing everything we can.
Reducing recidivism.
To reintegrate those folks into productive roles in society. So that's kind of a neat program. That's a partnership between Massasoit and the Plymouth County House of Correction. So kudos to them for doing that. So a lot of different pieces, and we're still kind of digesting all the testimony and materials, and, you know, we hope to have a good report to produce early next spring.
What will happen with this report? Is this something that will, when you have extra funding in sub budgets or planning future budgets, that monies can be set aside for incentive programs, something like that?
So we are sort of targeting this report for early spring for the reason that we typically do in the legislature. We do an economic development bill every session. That's been the practice ever since I've been there. And so we're kind of doing this with an eye towards that, because we know we're going to be doing an economic development bill. And so we want to be able to take some of the recommendations and try to implement them into the economic development bill, which eventually, you know, gets through the House and the Senate. So we're hopeful that that will be a good vehicle to try to move some of the ideas that we come up with.
Why is it that you seem to take a liking to anything that has to do with, it's career-driven, helping folks when it comes to workforce development, anybody, and even employers, and try to help them as far as being able to stock employees? What is it about employment that you like, that you gravitate towards those particular committees?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, like a lot of us, you know, even before the pandemic, workforce development was a major issue. If you talk to almost any employer, you'll hear, you know, hey, it's hard to find good employees. And it's obviously been exacerbated now as some people are, you know, hesitant to reenter the workforce and all the challenges we have with COVID and so forth. And, you know, as a Commonwealth, we as I like to say, we don't have, you know, an abundance of gold and silver or great weather all year round. We really, you know, our greatest asset is our people. It's our human capital. And so having a talented workforce is really crucial to Massachusetts' continued success, economic success. So investing in that workforce, I think, is paramount. And so, you know, my background as a former small business owner, I think, you know, it's something that's always, I've always been kind of drawn to that. And then this term, being appointed chairman of the Joint Committee on Labor and Workforce Development, was a great, you know, sort of platform to be able to dive into those issues on a deeper level. And I've really enjoyed that so far. So lots of work that's ongoing. We've made a lot of investments, I would say, you know, this past budget that we wrapped up this summer, you know, had record investments in a lot of the line items dealing with workforce development, including a brand new line item to put aside money for wind, our budding offshore wind industry. Many folks may be familiar with that off the coast of New Bedford, you know, where we have a major area of development for offshore wind. But we also are going to need a pipeline of people who, you know, the technicians, the engineers, the electricians, all the people that are going to be needed to help support that big industry. And so making sure that we have that pipeline that workforce pipeline in the works is incumbent upon us. And so we've invested a lot of money in that and a lot of other areas as well. I mentioned the prisoner reentry program, but, you know, really looking at a holistic way about our the entire economy from, you know, every sector, and how can we do more to try to invest in our workforce and make sure we're giving people the skills they need to succeed in the changing economy.
Any updates in regards to the Unemployment Insurance Commission that you chair?
So I like to joke that I chair two commissions. One is the Fun Commission, which is the future of work, and one is the not so much fun commission, which is the Unemployment Insurance Reform Commission. And I say not so much fun. It's vitally important. I don't want someone listening there is going to quote me and because it's another important issue, our unemployment insurance trust fund. We've seen during the pandemic how vital this has become for so many families who've relied on uninsurance benefits, unfortunately. And making sure the system is vibrant and solvent for the future is critical. And we've seen, you know, we've sort of seen a stress test, if you will, of our unemployment, our UI system, and it's revealed some flaws in the system that we need to correct. And so we have another commission that I co-chair that's looking at that UI commission and trying to come up with some ways to reform that. And I say it's the no fun one because it's there are no easy solutions here. These are challenging things or they would have been solved already. But we're doing a deep dive into that, and we've had six commission meetings on that. In fact, we have another one coming up next week. And we're listening to all the experts, looking at other states, what they've done with their UI systems, and trying to find ways where we can ensure the continued solvency and robustness of our system. And I just add, we should be proud that here in Massachusetts, we have one of the most generous systems of uninsurance benefits in the nation. And that is an important statement, I think, about as a Commonwealth we make, that, you know, we want to do everything we can to support workers who need it. And having said that, our business community, you know, they're the ones funding this. And so we need to make sure we're doing everything we can to make this system as efficient and as workable for them as well. So it's a challenging needle to thread, and we're certainly doing everything we can. We have, I think, a really great, diverse group of experts who are helping us to do that. And hopefully we'll have some solutions that we can offer in the early spring, or if not sooner.
We know that during the pandemic that unemployment insurance or assistance, whether it was from the state or the federal government, was essential in at least keeping folks sustaining throughout the pandemic. Where are things now as far as providing assistance to folks? Is there still plenty of revenue to be able to take care of folks who are, like you said, unsure whether it's safe for them to go back to work, or maybe they haven't had success in finding out that line of employment that would work for them and their schedule and their family life?
Yeah, so as folks may not be aware, you know, that our unemployment insurance system is basically a state and federal partnership. During the pandemic, the federal government increased the benefits in a number of ways. They added sort of the gig economy benefit people may be familiar with. They also extended the benefits for a longer period of time and added the additional $300 or $600 a week in benefits. Those extended benefits ran out in September. So that was something that was funded by the federal government. Obviously, that ended. And so that's been, you know, that's a challenge for folks. We're still kind of keeping an eye on the data to see what impact that will have here in Massachusetts. We've seen some anecdotes already. But our unemployment system, you know, our state benefits funded in partnership with the federal government continue. And so that's still that safety net is still there. It's important for people to know that. You know, we've seen before the pandemic started, we were in the black with our unemployment system. And now we're, you know, over $4 billion in the hole. And so you can see the impact that the pandemic has had. Mm. And all those benefits flowed out to people to help protect them and help support their families during the pandemic. So that, you know, that's money that was well spent, but it's money that we do have to recoup in some way because it is a trust fund. And so what goes out must come in. It's not funded through the regular state budget. So it's certainly a challenging, it's an important safeguard, but it's something that we need to make sure is fiscally solvent for the future. But certainly people out there listening should know, take with them that the benefits are there. If they do qualify and need them, please take advantage of those. You're paying for those. So.
Know that we are living in extraordinary times, and that's why we had to pay out that kind of money. How would that fund normally be replenished? You're saying that there's such a deficit now.
So I don't want to bore all your listeners, but so there's a there's a system of what we call an experience rating based on the different employers, how much they use the system. And then there's a schedule that's based on sort of a macro level, how well the system is doing from a macro point of view. And the rates are adjusted, the unemployment insurance rates, which are paid for by businesses, it's important to share that, are adjusted based on those two factors. We saw, because of the spike, the large spike in the number of claims and benefits being paid out, that the state, rather than to ensure that they would continue to be paid out, the state borrowed funds from the federal government to cover those costs, and so those loans have to be repaid, and that is an expense that we need to pay for through the UI fund, and so we have to come up with a way to do that. And so we had bonded that for the short term, and that's something we'll have to address moving forward. And that's one of the things we're looking at is, what are the ways we can reform or work to ensure the continued solvency of the UI fund moving forward.
If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with State Representative...
I think we just killed your ratings talking
Josh
about that.
Cutler. No. But these are things I think people want to know.
It's important stuff, but it's
very
it's,
important stuff. Yeah. We got a couple of more minutes with you here to talk about a couple of other things. Disability hiring tax news. I believe you might have an update.
Yeah, Kevin, just staying on the jobs front for a minute, I wanted to just share for folks, really excited, something I've been working on. We talked about this in some past shows, but there's a new disability hiring tax incentive that was passed in the legislature. It's now signed into law by the governor. It's now on the books, and it's for employers. So it's a tax benefit for employers of up to $5,000 for hiring a person with a disability, and up to $2,000. It's a one-time $5,000, and up to $2,000 every year for employing a person with a disability. So that's a refundable tax credit. It's open to any kind of business, whether it's a C corporation or an S corporation or other form of business. And I'm just trying to help spread the word, because I think it's a great thing. It's something I was really proud to work on, and I'm really excited that it's now on the books. And I know that Department of Revenue and so forth are coming out with some regulations about that that will, I'm sure they'll promote to businesses. But I'm doing everything I can to kind of help spread the word so people are aware, because we want to, as we recover from the pandemic, we want to make sure that everyone is recovering. And we know that people with disabilities tend to be underutilized in the economy. And so we want to do everything we can to sort of tap into that hidden network of talent.
This piqued my interest with when you and I were discussing things we could share with the audience. Energy Efficiency Day.
October 6th is energy. So there's a day for everything, Kevin. Haven't you learned that by now?
Yes.
No, but Energy Efficiency Day is October 6th. So it's a good day to think about. Every day is a good day to think about energy efficiency, mm-hmm. but especially October 6th. And Massachusetts should be proud that we are consistently number one or number two in the nation in terms of our energy efficiency programs. As I like to say, the best kind of climate change, the best form of climate change or energy efficiency is not using energy in the first place. And energy efficiency is all about, reducing our carbon footprint, but also reducing what we spend on energy. And that's a win-win. So it's a good day to think about energy efficiency. We had a good piece of legislation that was passed in the law earlier this year, the climate change bill, which included our Energy Save Act to ensure that there are more energy efficient products on the marketplace when you go to buy things. And so that was an important step forward for Massachusetts. And so October 6th is a good day to celebrate that and think about that.
And finally, I believe you have a pandas or a PANS disease update as well.
Yeah, so I guess that's another bit of good news is that some of your listeners may be familiar with pandas. PANS, it's a pediatric autoimmune disorder that affects kids, primarily adolescents. And it can come on and strike very suddenly. And for whatever reason, there seems to be a certain percentage of cases here in the South Shore, a higher percentage of cases here in the South Shore. And for many, many years, parents and advocates had been advocating for insurance coverage for pandas and PANS, because many insurance companies would often refuse to cover that. And it can get, quite expensive. I'm talking about doctor prescribed medication. And so really pleased, cut forward to the chase, is that earlier this year we were able to pass a bill that included an insurance mandate to require that insurance companies cover doctor prescribed treatment for pandas and PANS, which will save these families and their parents thousands of dollars, and really will be a huge relief to many families who are really struggling with something that's you know, can be a very difficult and debilitating illness. So really pleased with that victory that these parents really deserve all the credit for. And on Friday, it's Panda's Pans Day, another official day. And instead of having our normal advocacy, we're actually going to be more of a celebration because we're thanking everyone for supporting this important change.
Well, we thank you very much for the multiple updates, the cornucopia of updates that you provided.
Do your job, Kevin. Hopefully I did my job and got it all in.
Hopefully I'm continuing to do my job here as well. Folks want to reach out to you, especially your constituents in Duxbury, Pembroke, and Hanson. How can they do that?
But welcome to call, email, come visit us. And we're back to doing in-person office hours
Fantastic.
Now at the local senior centers, or visit the website, all of the above. So look forward to hearing from folks.
He is State Representative Josh Cutler. He's been our guest, and he says, do your job.
That's to you, Kevin.
Do your job. We're going to step aside when we come back. More Monday Night Talk right here. You guessed it, 95.9 WATD.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
McWiggin's Pub is an upscale Irish pub with all the class of a Boston pub. The menu offers favorites like steak tips, fish and chips, meatloaf, as well as burgers, sandwiches, and pizza. The relaxed, comfortable atmosphere at McWiggin's makes it the perfect place to eat, drink, and socialize with family and friends. New hours are Tuesday through Thursday, 4 to close, Friday through Sunday, 11:30 to close. McWiggin's Pub is at 546 Washington Street in Whitman, with the full menu available at McWigginspub.com.
Are you worried about your drinking?
Or is someone else worried about your drinking?
Alcoholics Anonymous has a solution.
There is no shame in living with a disease called alcoholism.
Regardless of your age, employment, or any other circumstances in your life, you deserve help from other individuals who understand what you are going through. Alcoholics Anonymous is here for you 24/7 at AA.org. Find online meetings at AAboston.org.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right, we are back. We thank the representative. Nice little segue, a little transition, a little shaking of hands as out leaves the state representative, Josh Cutler. Taking his place for the moment is Plymouth County Sheriff Joe McDonald. Sheriff? How are you?
I am good, Kevin. How are you? It's good to be back in the hot seat.
One of my favorite historians.
Ah, thank you.
And favorite law officials.
Thank you.
Or law enforcement officials.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
Good. Everything is good. We're weathering the pandemic, I think, better than anybody expected. We had a court decision come down last week that we can talk about after we speak about
sure.
some of this stuff.
Sure.
But no, things are great. You know, the staff down at the correctional facility is back in action, and they are working their tails off. And you know, I couldn't be more proud of the men and women that work down at the correctional facility every single day. You know, through this pandemic, they were our correctional staff especially was so good and so dedicated and so brave, I guess, for lack of a better word, to come to work, to risk their own health and the health of their families to make sure that the job got done. And I'm exceptionally proud of all of the folks that are working down there.
Do you feel that things have officially returned, or they're on their way to returning to life prior to COVID?
I do, Kevin. Maybe I'm overly optimistic, but I don't think so. I think that, you know, we're seeing variations in the virus, and I think that's a natural course. And in many ways, as terrible as the COVID has been, you know, historically, the 1918 Spanish flu pandemic was a quantum more virulent than this virus was, and that situation, that virus burnt itself out in about 3 years. So I think, you know, with the medical technology that we have now, and isn't it funny, you know, if you've read any of the, I've got some great books I can drop off to you sometime.
Oh, please.
Yeah.
That'd
about,
be great.
Yeah, but, you know, not just the 1918, but many of the other influenza pandemics that we've had over the years. And if you look at the old pictures, especially back in 1918, they look eerily familiar to the photos of us in 2020. So as much as things change, oftentimes they stay the same. But I do have a very good feeling that, you know, we're getting out ahead of this virus. A lot of people, myself included, have had it and recovered. You know, thankfully for me, it was more like a bad cold than anything else. But I was lucky. And there are many folks, many dear friends of mine that weren't so lucky. They either had a really rough go of it. Some were hospitalized. And I can think of one individual off the top of my head who was a very dear friend, and he didn't make it. But, you know, I think we're, as a nation, you know, as a world, we're on the mend on this. And I think it's going to get back to normal. And people say a new normal. I think the new normal is going to look a lot like the old normal. And we're very lucky at the correctional facility. You know, we were predicted to have rampant hospitalizations and infections and deaths, honestly. But, you know, knocking on the wood, we didn't have those things. Mm-hmm. And no hospitalizations, no deaths. Top-notch medical care. Again, our medical professionals that we have working at the correctional facility are outstanding. And we were lucky. And I'm often, you know, often I refer to things my grandfather had said. And, you know, he was a very successful business guy back when, after the war. And he said, you know, I attribute all of the success I've had in business to luck. He said, and I find that the harder I work, the luckier I am. And that was his way of telling me, kid, buckle down and work. So
we had, not too long ago, State Representative Matt Muratori, and I might be underestimating it. I want to say it might have been a few months ago. We had Matt Muratori and Michelle Pecoraro, who's part of the Plymouth 400
yes.
initiative.
Yep.
And they were talking about how with the pandemic, this isn't new. This happened 100 years ago.
Yeah.
When they were celebrating the 300th.
Yeah.
People don't realize that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. I mean, these things recur over time. And our reaction is largely the same. The good news now is that, you know, we have a lot of antivirals that we didn't have before. Yep. And I'm hearing now about a pill that might be available that people can, you know, a lot of times when people get sick, it's too late for a vaccination. But this antiviral pill seems to be showing some promise. And it's interesting, you know. Innovation is part of the human condition. I'm constantly amazed, and in a refreshing way, at the innovative intellect of many, many people. You know, we seem to be, as a species, we're resilient, I guess is the word I would use.
Yeah, but we're growing leaps and bounds. I mean, we're closing in on, what, 8 billion on this little rock that we live on.
Yeah,
and
there's a lot of us.
There's a lot of us, and, you know, the resources. But you're right. I feel that that our culture, that I feel that humankind has the marvel at some of the things we have been able to do in such a short span of time.
Yeah. Yeah, really, in geological time, it's the blink of an eye.
Yeah. Yeah, and our existence is basically a blink of an eye. I mean, what, this, you know, the solar system, what, 4 billion years?
Yeah.
And we're just a mere speck.
Yeah. And, you know, and we're not far off from the technology that's going to allow us to at least begin colonizing or looking at setting up exploration
yeah.
on Mars.
I know.
And
the little copter they got going, and just the rovers and all they've discovered.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It is. And what's even more amazing is coming up on October 16th.
Yes, indeed.
It's just great.
Yes.
If someone out there, if you, yes, you, don't look around, are interested in a career in corrections, there's going to be a job fair that's going to be coming up on October 16th. It's a Saturday. Right? 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. So if you don't get up till 10 a.m., it's okay. You got enough time to brush your hair and get on down to 24 Long Pond Road in Plymouth.
Yeah, and the reason we're doing it on a Saturday is it's on the academy side down at the Sheriff's Department, where, you know, we have our Corrections Academy, but also The Municipal Police Training Academy is there as well. And there won't be any classes in session on the Saturday. So people can come in. They can talk to representatives from our staff who perform some of the specialty functions. And when we talk about corrections, the number of career opportunities, you know, people think I know what corrections is all about because I saw the Shawshank Redemption or I watched Orange is the New Black. You know, couldn't be further from the reality.
Storytelling, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, yeah. So, you know, there are great specialties. There are program opportunities, people working in the rehabilitative programs. We have medical professionals, as I had referred to. You know, we didn't privatize all of that when a lot of sheriff's offices did. So we have contracts with doctors from the outside. But our nursing staff there is all in-house state employees, and that's been important to me to keep that going. And quite frankly, we've been really challenged on trying to get people to come in because I think a lot of people think it's a scary thing, and it's not. It's a very safe and controlled environment. If things are bad happening, you'd be hearing about it in the news all the time, and you don't. So I think. You know, our folks, our security folks, the corrections officers have done a phenomenal job, and our management team down there, creating a safe environment. So a lot of people will say, well, I'm not really interested in being a corrections officer, but I'd love to be a canine officer, mm-hmm. You know, something like that. And that certainly is a very interesting specialty. They're perimeter security on our fence, but they're constantly going out into the community to help look for missing children or senior citizens. They're also out there, you know, chasing down fugitives. It's very interesting, but the way you become a canine officer is to be a corrections officer first. You know, they're all trained as corrections officers first, and then additionally they receive police training. And it's going to be interesting. You know, we're in a period of change right now with the criminal justice reform, and we're not exactly sure what the training requirements are going to be. You know, for they're doing a bridge academy, they call it. So the guys that are trained now will be able to receive additional training. So we'll see. I mean, it's interesting, and I always remind myself when things start to look overwhelming that you know, we've figured this out in 48 other states. So I think we will be able to do this. But you know, some of the other benefits that people have there. Now the salary is great, as you see on the poster here.
It's a great scale.
Yeah, it is a great scale, and if you come down, evidence of that, you can just look around the parking lot. There's not a lot of used cars. A lot of these guys are, and ladies are doing very well. No, believe me, they earn every penny.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, with our short staffing situation, there's been a lot of overtime, and sometimes that's forced overtime. And I feel very badly that, you know, there are people that want to live their lives, but they're not able to go home or they have to work double shifts. And, you know, it's years ago, many more people didn't seem to mind that. But people today, I think, have a much healthier thought process. You know, they want to have a quality of life and a family life, and that's important, and we understand that. So, you know, we're trying to work around those things, but it's a great job.
What are some of the positions that could possibly be up for consideration for an applicant who qualifies?
Well, the person who's going to qualify, and you know, that's part of the difficult part here.
Qualifying,
who's going to qualify, right? Obviously, coming through the door inside the correctional facility, what people may or may not realize, we're a lot like a town. We've got an education department. We've got program staff that are doing rehabilitative programs. We've got a very active ministry that's there. A lot of volunteers come in and help with those types of things. But the general career path, or the most common career path, that someone would come in as a corrections officer. Occasionally, people come in looking to be corrections officers, and we realize when we interview them, they're more interested in programming. So they want to do the rehabilitative side. They want to do vocational training, things like that. And we try and route them in that direction. But when you are a corrections officer, there are so many different directions that you can go. Obviously, working security within the correctional facility, but the canine we talked about, transportation officers, and that's additional training, police training as well. Our transportation officers, we drive, I had a number out of it with me tonight, but millions of miles every year. bringing our population of inmates is a very dynamic population. They have a lot of appointments, whether they be medical appointments or court hearings. So our transportation unit is driving people all over the state. And it's always amazing to me how all of the sheriff's offices coordinate to get people. You know, we may have people in Plymouth here that have to be out to Springfield for a court hearing, you know, but they do it and they do a great job. So that's another specialty that can be very interesting. There are special investigative units within the correctional facility that people can get involved in. We've got something called IPS, the Inner Perimeter Security Team. They're like our detectives inside, and they interface very substantially and routinely with local police departments, their detective divisions. We've got a lot of task forces that we're involved with on the federal side. So we'll have a DEA task force, FBI. Occasionally we're doing some things with ICE. So there's a lot of, many, many directions that you can take your career as a corrections officer.
But there's a couple of, and I know we've got a few more minutes left here. Again, we're speaking with Plymouth County Sheriff Joe McDonald, great friend to the radio program and to the radio station. But, you know, you're talking about some of the special canine transportation part of the IPS unit. But you have other things here. Again, this is all part of advancement.
Yeah.
Horticulture. Right?
Yes.
You somebody who's got a green thumb? Horticulture's your way, right?
Yeah. You know, we have a very active rehabilitative program in the form of our correctional farm. Yep. And that, you know, when I first got elected, that was somewhat controversial. Sheriff, how long have you guys had a farm? let's see, what's today? Today's Monday, about 200 years. But it's been a great thing. We haven't, unfortunately, during the pandemic, we haven't had the opportunity to have the inmates be out there as much as we would like. You know, we've really essentially closed that off until things calm down a little bit. But it's a great specialty. I know the corrections officers that are out there, when they're corrections officers also have a mandatory retirement age of 65. And
really?
Yeah, they do. And I can think, it's a group four pension, what they call a group four. It's a public safety pension, same as police and fire. So they do have a mandatory retirement age at 65. And everyone that's retired from the farm, I know, has really hated to leave. It's such a wonderful place. And any families or people that have been there understand why.
But then you have your culinary arts, cooking for your kids.
Yes.
I don't know what that is. And then graphic arts.
Yeah, we have a print shop. And a lot of our...
Where do I sign up?
Yeah. A lot of our correction staff are certified as instructors in those disciplines. You know, the print shop, we only do jobs for other law enforcement agencies, government agencies, nonprofits. But oftentimes the inmates will have the graphic design class where they will design a T-shirt, let's say, for a special event for a nonprofit group or a town. And they see that project through from concept to production. And it's really a great thing.
So wait, you tell me I can't get my specialty line of Monday Night Talk T-shirts and hoodies done at the is it strictly?
Well, you know, if you're a nonprofit, maybe we can. We'll have you make your own, Kevin.
Self-service. Self-service. It's good to know. And again, just a reminder to folks: October 16th, Saturday, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Any other information you want to give before? Because we just got a couple more minutes.
Sure.
Left
here. And I know. Time is precious here. One of the things, a lot of people may be thinking, geez, I just graduated high school. Sounds like it might be interesting to me. You need to be 19 years of age. There is a general knowledge test, and I think, you know, anybody that's graduated high school should be able to bang that out without much of a problem. And there's a physical fitness test, which can be problematic. But, you know, if you know what the requirements are, you can train toward that. We require a valid Massachusetts driver's license. They must be a high school graduate, at least a high school. We don't require degrees, although they're great to have, and we look for that. But the other thing is, and you had mentioned it before, you touched upon it, the successful completion of the background check. And many individuals present with great credentials. And, you know, we need them to understand. And anyone that wants to come down, the most important thing that I can tell an applicant is, please, if there's something on your background, let us know.
Yeah.
Because we're going to find it out. We're a law enforcement agency. And many times we can work around those things. You know, it may not be a fatal flaw, But if you lie about it, it becomes a fatal flaw.
If you're forthcoming, your chances are someone understanding are a lot greater than you going, oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Nobody wants to hear that from an applicant.
Yeah, and it's heartbreaking, to have some of these kids that present and they misrepresented on an application, and now it becomes an issue. The issue isn't what happened. The issue is now the fact that you've misrepresented an official document. So please, if you think you've got an issue, let us know what it is, and we'll tell you right off the top. We'll be very honest. If you're honest with us, we can be honest with you. Otherwise, we're just shooting in the dark.
Sheriff, as always, thank you for your time and your patience. And
Kevin, thank you.
Sharing this, and a quick thank you to Karen Barry, who also is fantastic at saying, hey, this would be a great idea for
to Karen,
share information.
Karen is the best. I'd love to come back and visit with you.
Please
every
do.
Time I come, the conversation is so easy, it goes so fast that I'm sad to leave. But there's a zillion things we can talk about, and I'd love to, not the least of which are some of the history things. And
I'm a big fan of your segments.
I appreciate
you've
that.
You've been it's probably the wrong thing to say to a sheriff, but you've been a repeat offender in those areas.
I have. I keep coming back.
Keep coming back, but they're great gems, and we definitely thank you. Just a reminder, if folks want to find out more, and you can correct me if I'm saying this wrong, www.pcsdma.org, and this says here, /CO. .html. Now, I don't know if that's accurate or not.
Well, I don't think you have to get that complicated.
Just go to the website.
Yeah, the PCSDMA.org.
Go there and find out more if you're intrigued by what we talked about this job fair on October 16th. Go to the website.
Yeah, and the other thing that I'll mention, I'm just quickly as I head out the door, mm-hmm. I see you've got three photographs on the poster. Two photographs highlighting young men. One's a corrections officer, and the other is obviously a canine officer, and then a class. I'm sorry that you can't see it better, but these opportunities are for men and for women. It's important that we have both working side by side at the correctional facility. So if you're thinking to yourself this is not an appropriate job for a woman, absolutely it is.
Excellent. There he is, Plymouth County Sheriff Joe McDonald here talking a little bit about that job fair happening on October 16th, 24 Long Pond Road in Plymouth. We're going to step aside. That concludes the first hour. Can you believe it? It just flew by. Hour number two is on deck. We're going to get ready to serve it up to you in just a moment. You're tuned into Monday Night Talk here at 95.9 WATD.
WATD FM Marshfield. WBMS Brockton. The South Shore's first choice for live team coverage of breaking news, emergency traffic, and severe weather. WATD. Streaming online at 95.9WATD.com. And with your smart speaker, just by saying play WATD. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9WATD.
McGuigan's Pub is an upscale Irish pub with all the class of a Boston pub. The menu offers favorites like steak tips, fish and chips, meatloaf, as well as burgers, sandwiches, and pizza. The relaxed, comfortable atmosphere at McGuigan's makes it the perfect place to eat, drink, and socialize with family and friends. New hours are Tuesday through Thursday, 4 to close, Friday through Sunday, 11:30 to close. McGuigan's Pub is at 546 Washington Street in Whitman, with the full menu available at McGuigan'sPub.com.
If you want a drink, that's your business. If you want to stop, that's for Alcoholics Anonymous.
AA is an inclusive fellowship of individuals all around the world. The one thing you need to ask yourself is, am I ready to do something about my drinking problem? For more information, literature, and videos about Alcoholics Anonymous, go to AA.org. To find a meeting near you, call 617-426-9444 or visit aaboston.org.
I'm Peter Brown of Tiny & Sons Auto Glass in Pembroke. People ask me, is there anything they can do to prevent getting a broken windshield?
Is there anything I can do to prevent getting a broken windshield?
See? There is. Those big gravel trucks, when they're being loaded, rocks get stuck in the framework of the bed. Truck hits a bump, rock hits your windshield. It pays to stay way back.
It pays to stay way back.
However, if your windshield is broken, just call 1-888-64-TINIES. And thank you.
download previous episodes of Monday Night Talk and listen to them anywhere. Check out 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Thank you very much for the plug, Joe. I don't get them all that often, except usually on the South Shore Morning News. Thank you, Rob, for always reminding folks as to what's on the radio program on Mondays. And we thank you for tuning in and downloading some of the latest episodes. And so we do our best to make sure we put those up and make them available for the large fan base. Joining us right now, he is a repeat offender as well. We were teasing earlier the sheriff calling him a repeat offender, coming on the radio program and talking about history. We have Brockton Mayor Robert Sullivan, as he does a somewhat regular program with us, just to kind of bring us up to speed on everything in the City of Champions. Mayor, how are you doing this evening?
Kevin, I'm doing perfect. How are you tonight?
We're doing good. We're doing good. It's unfortunate that the way we're going to have to start a segment off is somewhat on a sad note, and I think you know where I'm going with this, as to the passing of someone who is we talk about Brockton and Brocktonians who are champions in their own right. I would say that Hank Tartaglia would fit that mold.
Yeah, I mean Hank was just a Brockton guy through and through, and you know, the Tartaglia family has really been an integral part of the city of Brockton for generations. Of course, George's Cafe was owned by Hank's brother Charlie, and Louis Tartaglia, the late Louis, had been the executive director of our Board of Health here in the city of Brockton. And Hank was just a great guy. He was a character. He always called me Buddy. And,
hey, Buddy.
You know,
hey.
Buddy, he would say that. And I just, on behalf of the city and as a lifelong Brocktonian, I'm very saddened. And you know, I spoke to his son and his wife, and I went to the wake and yep. spoke to Charlie. And I had actually called Hank the day before he passed at the hospital. He was at Good Sam, and he was upbeat. He was feeling well. He said he was coming to the mayor's office to see me the next day. And you know, he passed. And you know, we lose a little bit of Brockton when we lose some of these folks. And you know, he was a public servant. I mean, he was currently before he passed, he was chair of the License Commission here in the city of Brockton. And you know, one of the first official acts I did as mayor was to reappoint Hank to that term. And, you know, there's a void. There's definitely a void. And the stories he could share. And, you know, in his younger days, he was a coach. He did a lot of baseball, American Legion, Post 35. Loved boxing. Loved to talk about Marvin and Rocky. And just a great guy. And, again, when we lose little bits of history like that, you know, we have good memories and fond memories. And I always will. And you know, the sadness, you know, is real. And we took a moment of silence at the school committee. I asked to take a moment of silence when I had heard, and we did that at my department head meeting. And as you know, Kevin, I mean, you know Brockton just as well as I do. The Tartaglia family is just a key part of Brockton.
Yeah, and I was, you know, as we were setting up the radio program at 6:15 and kind of you're laying out what the program was going about and kind of giving a rundown as to some of the things you and I were going to talk about. You know, I did kind of tease the fact that the Tartaglia family, you know, we call the City of Champions. We think of Rocky Marciano was one of the cornerstones as to the city, you know, being home to champions and knowing that Snap's Tartaglia was a corner man for the Brockton blockbuster, you know?
Yeah, I mean, when we talk about the Marcianos, the Taglias, the Pettis, the Colombos, yep. You know, these are just, these aren't just names. I mean, these are lifelong Brocktonians, pieces of fabric of the city. And, you know, Hank retired. He had been in the health department for the city of Taunton, you know, and just a great guy. And again, my thoughts and prayers go out to his wife, Kathy, and Enrico, his son, who works for the city as well. So, Sad times, but, you know, I'll always laugh at the last conversation I had with him because he was giving me some political advice, and he was just a good guy, good guy.
And I was kind of emulating Hank, and I do that in fondness because back many, many years ago, I produced that sport that popular sports talk radio program.
Yes, you did.
With Tartaglia and Marciano, as you had, you know, Peter Marciano Jr., who was part of it. And when the two of them would get screaming at each other about a particular sports topic, Enrico would come in and try to be the calming force. You know, people loved tuning into that show, whether it was to talk about sports or talk about one of the, you know, one of the city issues that was on Brocktonians' minds. You know, Hank was one of the leading, you know, individuals who wanted to perpetuate that conversation for anybody who would either listen on the radio or would want to call in and share their opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I was fortunate enough to call Peter Marciano Jr. a friend and Hank a friend, the late Pitt Perrin as well. Pitt
That's right.
Be on
yep.
that show.
Yep.
And, you know, I was on that show, and you never knew what was going to be said. You walked in there, and you had to have your guard up a little bit, but it was all in good fun. And I'll tell you, they knew sports, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
They knew the history of sports. And as mayor, I'm just saddened by that. And as a guy that really knew those people growing up and looking up to a lot of these folks, when they pass, you just think of the good times. That's all you can do.
Indeed. What would the process be in order to add a member to the licensing commission, and will they have to reorg, or will whoever serving as vice chair take on Hank's role as the chairperson?
Yeah, I mean, I've named, this was previous, you know, there's alternates as well, right? So you have the permanent members and an alternate,
right,
if the permanent can't make it. So, I had asked today in my office to my chief of staff if we could coordinate a Zoom with all the current members, the permanent and the alternates, and talk to the folks. I mean, a person that's on that that I appointed is Paul Studinski Jr., who, you know, former police chief who served on the city council with me for a very long time. And, you know, there's just some really good people on there. And that's a really, really important board and commission in the city of Brockton. So, you know, we'll kind of sort through that in due time. But, heartfelt condolences to the Tartaglia family.
We go from talking about, sad news or remembering a Brocktonian to talking about the return of a former principal, Susan Zakowicz, who did a great job as principal, decided to retire. And from what I understand, she will be returning to the school department.
She's back. I mean, Dr. Zach is, she's a great person. I mean, she was my social studies teacher.
Me too.
My freshman year, 1984 at Brockton High.
That's
she was
funny.
In the Azure. Really just a great educator, a really hands-on teacher.
Yeah.
Made it fun. Did a lot of role-playing with some of the historical components, and just a great person. And she moved herself up the ranks. I mean, she became director of social sciences, and then, you know, ultimately she became principal of Brockton High, and she turned Brockton High around. I mean, you know, the educational gap was real. When she became principal, she was able to really turn it in a rapid pace. And so, I remember the New York Times and the Washington Post ran a story about Brockton High School.
Yep.
And how wonderful the turnaround had been. So Dr. Zach had retired and was living in Florida. And Superintendent Mike Thomas, who's a dear friend of Dr. Zach, had asked me what my thoughts were. And I said, if you can get Sue back, by all means. So he somehow got her out of retirement. She's here for 1 year as the acting deputy superintendent. She's already presented her ideas and suggestions and insights before the school committee a couple times. And she's just, you know, what you see is what you get. She loves Brockton, even though she was living down south. She loves Brockton, and she's one of the biggest advocates for the boys and girls in the Brockton public schools. And she will do, and this year she will do some wonderful, wonderful things. And I proudly welcomed her back when we had the first day at school. And she's just, you know her, Kevin. She's just a very, very, very kind person. Loves Brockton High. She is a boxer through and through, a graduate of Brockton High herself. And this is a good, really a good role for her. She's going to be geared towards working with the principals at all the schools, making sure that we really turn it around. And as we know, I mean, the educational gap was greatly increased because of COVID and because of remote learning. And with Dr. Zach being day-to-day operations with Mike Thomas, and the seven dedicated school committee members and myself as chair, you know, we got a lot of work to do. As you know, Department of secondary and elementary education, DESE, had come back with a favorable report on Brockton. And so, you know, we entered into an agreement with Commissioner Riley, and we're going to turn it around, and Dr. Zach is going to be one of those people driving the engine, that's for sure.
Now, you say she's going to be on board for a year. So other than working with principals, does she have to put together a report? Is she going to put together some kind of guidance that the principals can look back on? Or will she be looking for someone that could possibly step into her role and continue with assisting the principals?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's to be determined on who would come in after Sue. But I could tell you she's... when you say the word retired, she's not retired, man. She's at it, and she and her husband relocated back up here. And we also were able to get Maria LaFort, who had been retired from Brockton High School. Dr. LaFort is helping the cause as well. And listen, anytime we can bring back people that have a recipe for success, we got to do that, and we got to listen and learn from them to be effective leaders. And Mike Thomas is a great guy, and Mike and I went to high school together. He's class 87, I'm class 88, and we're both fathers of young children. So, my role as mayor, Kevin, that's really an honor and privilege to serve, and that's my title. But the biggest thing right now is to make sure that the Brockton Public Schools is moving in such a positive manner. Student Opportunity Act was long overdue. I want to thank Claire Cronin, Jerry Cassidy, Michelle Dubois, and Mike Brady for really being advocates on that, our delegation. And it's $21 million. Never mind the ESSER 3, which is the school's portion of the ARPA money that we'll be getting from the feds. That's going to be about $34 million. So, we have to spend the money wisely. It's great to say we're getting a windfall of cash, but, we need to make sure that we get the biggest bang for the buck and we maximize the return on investment. And, having a Dr. Zachowitz come back and work hand-in-hand on a daily basis with Superintendent Thomas and his team, and myself as mayor and chair of school committee. I mean, that's just a really good thing, and it's an opportunity that we couldn't pass up.
I think that's phenomenal that you and I shared a teacher, Dr. Zach, because I had her, back in the early 80s. She was my social studies teacher, and I thought she was probably one of the hands-down best teachers at that time.
Without question, and... You have teachers, and when you're talking about Brockton High, I mean, it's one of the largest public high schools east of Mississippi. It's a city itself, but I can speak for both Dr. Maria LaFort and Dr. Zachowitz. I mean, Maria LaFort would spend hours working with me on my college essays in the Red Cafeteria after school, and Dr. Zach was just as dedicated to the craft. So, these are really the examples of educators, and I come from a long line of educators. My dad, as you know, Kevin, retired Brockton High teacher, and one of my sisters is a teacher in the system. And, being a product of Brockton Public Schools means something to me. And at the same time, I never want to give the impression that I don't care about any of the other educational facilities. We have New Heights Charter School in Brockton. We have Cardinal Spellman High School. We have Trinity Catholic Academy. We have the Seventh-day Adventists on Court Street. And, of course, Southeastern Regional Vocational Technical High School, 65% of those kids are from the city of Brockton. So it's all hands on deck, and we have to make sure that we provide the tools in the toolbox for the next generation, which are the boys and girls in school right now.
If you're just tuning in, we are speaking with Brockton Mayor Robert Sullivan. He is our guest. Coming up at 7:30, we had a change of plans with Mike Riley from the sports station just up the dial. He's going to be joining us, as well as Jared Valenzuela, host of the JV team. We'll talk a little Patriots, but right now talking with Mayor Sullivan. And Mayor, changing gears here, just a couple of weeks away. I think we got less than a month for the city's general election. How is this election different or similar to past times that your name's been on the ballot?
Yeah, I mean, it's different in the sense that we're still dealing with COVID and Delta variant breakthrough cases. I mean, all that's real, and we're dealing with that and the numbers and the masks. And but in terms of my campaign strategy, it's always been, since I first put my name on the ballot in 2005, it's knocking on doors, it's talking to people, it's not how long you serve, it's what you've done while you've been there. And I truly am proud of the fact that I can stand on my record and you know, I am a candidate for re-election for mayor, and there's an election coming up on November 2nd. And, you know, we had a preliminary. We don't call it a primary because it's nonpartisan in Brockton. So my Democratic friends, my Republican friends, my unenrolled independent friends that went to the poll in September, I'm just reminding everybody again, go to the polls in November. There's a lot of names on the ballot. Again, we're every 2 years in Brockton for mayor, every 2 years for city council, and every 2 years for school committee. So, you know, we have a lot of work to do in the city of Champions, and you know, I'm humbly asking people to give me two more years to keep working. And collaboration is key. And you know, we're heading in the right direction. The transit oriented and the development. One thing I didn't do is pause construction like some other mayors did, Kevin. And it's paying really off in dividends right now. It's paying off beautifully. And you know, we're going to have 800 housing units in the queue right now. And downtown is being transformed. And, you know, growing up here, I never remember seeing as much construction and cranes. And, you know, a lot of work was done by previous mayors as well, you know, and I served again with Mayor Harrington, Mayor Balzotti, Mayor Carpenter, Mayor Rodriguez as a counselor. So there's a lot of work to do. But, you know, I took the time to do a walking tour just last week with Secretary Mike Keneally from the Baker-Polito administration. And Lieutenant Governor Polito has been just a wonderful advocate for Brockton as well. So, you know, you mentioned Jared Valenzuela. He's a wonderful new addition to the county commissioners. And, you know, him and Sandy Wright and Greg Hanley, three dedicated public servants on the county level. And I'm really fortunate to have a wonderful working relationship with those folks, because at the end of the day, Brockton being the only city in Plymouth County, I've been able to talk to the town administrators and the town managers. And, you know, it's a good situation where, you know, my view is always this. We're better together. So working together helps the county, helps the city of Brockton. And, you know, we just did a regional task force. I do it every month and a half or 2 months or so, Kevin, where I have any city and town in Plymouth County and a couple in Norfolk, you know, like Randolph and Holbrook to join on a call. And we just talk about what's going on in respect to municipalities. And is there anything we can do to work in collaboration to you know, to help each other. So, of course, it's always controlled by COVID, but there's so much going on in the city of Brockton, and, you know, I look forward to continuing to campaign up until 8 p.m. on the 2nd when the polls close, November 2.
What's interesting is that the city center has continued to thrive, and it's growing. You've got the transit-oriented developments or residential developments that are going on. You've got businesses like the Brockton Beer Company, which is going to be, I think, a staple in the downtown area for a long time to come. What's important about making sure that the mission is completed when it comes to economic development and the city center?
I mean, I think it's extremely vital for the future of Brockton. I mean, when you are looking at you know, many years ago when I joined the city council, I helped craft an ordinance called 40R, which is smart growth zoning. And a lot of folks at the time said to me, what are you even talking about, Bob? And I said, listen, this is truly a catalyst for development if we accept this. And we did in the downtown area. And Trinity Financial invested $30 million because of 40R. And we're starting to see so many other developers, and not just local developers. We're getting people from Manhattan and Florida and the West Coast. I mean, there really is a return on investment because the transit-oriented, but the price point. So we're getting young professionals relocating from Quincy and Braintree and Dorchester and Southie and Charlestown and Cambridge because the price point is real in Brockton. So with that being said, you need to have the amenities that goes along with housing. So I was able to craft, Kevin, a really good working relationship pre-COVID with Harvard Kennedy School of Government. They have a mayor's new mayor's retreat, and I was able to go there and I met some people, and then we were able to foster, when I became mayor, an internship where some Harvard kids and one MIT kid came and did an analysis on safe streets. And we've had a lot of pedestrian fatalities over the years, and they really did a deep dive. And so the work product was awesome. So I then just asked them if they would help us out again. And I had to pitch it to the to Kennedy School, and they accepted it. So we have another group of students. Now they're doing analysis on downtown Brockton and what are the amenities that are there, what are the amenities that are lacking, and how we can really leverage the synergy right now of the development and the investment in the city.
I feel that we've really teased the economic development part of what could be a potential key issue in the race for mayor, your reelection. What other, as we have a couple of moments left here with you, Mayor, what other key issue do you feel that is resonating with Brockton residents that you want to take a moment to talk about?
Well, I mean, I think at the end of the day, people are hurting, right? Financially, emotionally, physically because of COVID. So, you know, my whole thing was to come in on January 6th of 2020 before the pandemic and then have to really pivot and stand strong during the pandemic and help rebuild the economy and fight COVID. And then I took a lot of necessary steps to protect the residents and business owners. And, you know, some of those people are still mad at me, you know, when I did executive orders and curfews and closed down gyms. But, you know, I did it out of the best interest of the health and safety. But, you know, being able to work with community partners, organize testing, and just fighting for the residents and making sure that critical emergency funds went to small businesses and over $500,000 for our RAF program. And, you know, at the end of the day, Kevin, together Brockton is recovering, but it's also rebuilding. And, you know, I'm fortunate to be the mayor of the city that I grew up in, where my wife grew up and where my parents and my in-laws still live. And Brockton is wealthy. It's not financially wealthy. It's a hardworking city, but it's wealthy with people and the wonderful residents that make up Brockton, the beautiful diversity that has always made Brockton, Brockton. And so, I mean, I look forward to continue campaigning. I'm always looking for any ideas on how we can enhance Brockton. You know, doing a junior cadet program and a cadet program for Brockton Police so we can get young Brocktonians interested in law enforcement is something that I brought to fruition, and it's coming here now, which is awesome, right? We're going to be able to create really a recipe for career growth, but also making sure that the students in Brockton get what they need. And we're now a one-to-one school district because we were able to spend almost $6 million to get laptops for all the boys and girls. And we were able to, again, get reimbursed under the CARES Act. So I look forward to the ARPA money that the feds are going to be sending us. And, you know, the bonding is at a historical rate right now to borrow money. It's the best time to do it. So, you know, we have a $98 million bonding authorization for a public safety building, which will be fire and police and IT and BEMA. So there's a lot going on. If you haven't been to Brockton in a long time, I would encourage you to come here. And, you know, we have to market it and just tell the story. You know, I mean, you see it on the news, Kevin, but you don't know how many kids have graduated, go on to Ivy League schools, or the fact that Thomas Edison had the first electrified movie theater and fire station and streetlight here in Brockton. And, you know, James Edgar created the first department store Santa Claus here in Brockton. You know, and Sacco and Vanzetti were arrested in downtown Brockton. And, you know, there's just so much. Frederick Douglass and the Liberty Tree and Marvin and Rocky. But, you know, the thing is, Kevin, Brockton is a great place, and we need to just continue to work to make it better for everybody. That's the key.
Mayor, we want to thank you so much for joining us. If folks want to find out more about your campaign for reelection to be mayor for another term, how can they do that?
Yeah, sure. They, by all means, check out the website, which is www.electrobertsullivan.com. And, you know, you can request information. You can read, you know, things that are going on. And, you know, again, the biggest thing is I'm just encouraging everybody that's a registered voter in Brockton to vote, you know, do your duty and vote. I'm humbly asking for my vote. But if you want to go in a different direction, at the end of the day, voting is going to determine how we move forward. And I hope to continue in this role. And I also hope to continue in a role to be your unofficial co-host as we move forward. But I just want to thank you for what you do, Kevin. And I mean that. I say that every time I'm on. But, you know, you are able to tell the stories that need to be told and inform the listeners of really important information. So kudos to you, my friend.
Well, we'll have to get you back in studio soon and not from other means, but definitely have you in and talk what it is that you like to talk about, and that is the great city of Brockton.
Thank you, my friend. Be well. Stay safe. Bye, Kevin.
You got it. There he is, a Brockton mayor, Robert Sullivan. Is that concludes that segment. We got one more left in the chamber. We're going to step aside just for a moment, and when we come back, you're not going to want to miss this segment here on Monday Night Talk, heard only on 95.9 WATD.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Each year, about one out of two men and one out of three women will develop cancer. But there's good news. Today's cancer survival odds are much better than 2 or even 3 years ago. Things move that fast. So if you're diagnosed, be sure to have someone in your corner who is on top of all the latest cancer treatments and techniques, the latest research, the newest equipment, all the newest medicines available through clinical trials. And speaking of corners, here's more good news. Advanced Cancer Care is now just around the corner. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare treats patients locally, with all oncology services and specialties conveniently housed under one roof. The center is affiliated with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, so you'll be seen by Harvard Medical Faculty physicians and oncologists. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare, in affiliation with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Cancer has just met its match. Find out why at mysignaturecare.org/cancercare.
There are a lot of exciting things happening this fall. I want to focus on what's important, not what's for dinner. Luckily, HelloFresh delivers everything I need, and it's 30% cheaper than grocery shopping. The quick and easy recipes are perfect for weeknights. We're all busy, but with HelloFresh, I actually have time to enjoy my meals. Go to HelloFresh.com/DanaCortez14 and use code DanaCortez14 for up to 14 free meals plus free shipping. That's code DanaCortez14 for 14 free meals at HelloFresh.com/DanaCortez14.
This financial update with CBS News business analyst Jill Schlesinger is sponsored by Dell Small Business.
It's never too early for holiday shopping.
You're going to end up paying 5 to 10% more this holiday season, so I would start monitoring prices online right now.
To run a growing business is to be on a journey. Dell Technologies advisors are here with the right Windows PC and tech solutions, so you can stop at nothing for your customers. Call an advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL and start to a simpler experience with Windows 11 Pro.
Be a part of the show. Call in and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right. Time for our special segment. I call this a TV segment. There's no visuals involved. It's basically the Tachi and Valenzuela segment.
Love it.
As, oddly enough... I was tuned in last week to the JV team, 6:15 to 7, every Wednesday night, and he mentioned that he was going to be going to the game. And he actually had a good friend, Jerry Thornton, on. Jerry normally does the, he usually does a podcast.
Yes.
On Monday night. Yes. So it was hard for him to be able to do it tonight. He was on my mind knowing that if there's one guy who's dealing with the therapy of Tom Brady being on another team... and Tom Brady coming back, it was Jerry.
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you, Kevin, it's felt... First, actually, before I forget, I just want to thank Mayor Sullivan for his kind words. I was walking in as he was saying that, yeah. And certainly being a county commissioner the last several months and getting to know him and work with him for the betterment of Brockton has been great. But to that point, Kevin, it's really... I feel like I've been in denial, right? It's sort of like he left, no fans at Gillette last year, so it's not like you really experience it. Then he wins a Super Bowl, he being Tom Brady, of course. And it was like sort of like just this abstract thing. And then all of a sudden, you get to last week, you get past that New Orleans game, which was kind of a debacle on the Patriots game. And then it just starts to flow again. And you start to feel like, holy crap, Tom Brady really is not a New England Patriot. And like, weirdly enough, being there last night, and you might be able to tell I'm a little hoarse, I was rooting for the Patriots, but I absolutely rooted very loudly for Tom Brady when he came out of that tunnel. I think I can compartmentalize things. I know a lot of other people can't.
Yeah.
I can, thankfully, so I can like put things in a bucket. Like I can root for Tom Brady coming out because those six banners that were over my left shoulder really weren't there without him. I mean, it's a team effort, and obviously Belichick was the architect of them, but you can't discount Tom Brady's contributions to them, but it's... It was tough. It was tough to, like, you know, when he got sacked, I, like, golf clapped. I'm like, I can't root for Tom Brady to get sacked.
Well,
I didn't know when to go to the bathroom. Do I go when the Pats are on offense? I would never do that before, yeah. But I don't want to miss Tom Brady.
It's funny. So oddly enough, so what section were you in?
218.
And I was in 316.
You were over my right, Joel. Banner's over my left. Kevin Tachi over my right.
Right. So it was interesting that I was a level up. But it was fit. Now, when did you get into the stadium, and did you actually see, because there was a throng of cameras and reporters down at the entrance where the visitors come in out of the tunnel. And there was a time when some of the, this was a pregame warm-ups, when you would have a spattering of players from the Bucks, the Buccaneers, come out, and whether it's the punter, and he skies a few, just like, thing, stretching out and getting ready. But were you there when the respective quarterbacks came out?
I was not. We got in, we got to our seats about, I don't know, I want to say 5-10 minutes before the video tribute. Tried to get in a little sooner, just foot traffic moved a little slowly as you started getting closer to game time. It was one of those unique things where, you know, you go to a game like that, you tailgate, right? Like, who is pining to get into Gillette Stadium early to pay $15 for a beer? Like, nobody's working hard for that. And yet, I was at the tailgate, like, I want to get in. There's like really two stated purposes for me being at this game right now. It's to see that silly little video, which was a silly. I think they did a very nice job with it.
It's okay.
And then to see him break the all-time passing yards record. Yeah. That's the stated purpose of being there. And to feel the emotion and to feel the energy. I went, you know, Kevin, I went to Super Bowl 51. And for those who don't remember that specific Super Bowl, the Falcons blew a 28-3 lead.
Yeah, I was watching that game
Saturday night. I was doing it. I was actually, I don't get emotional about sports, but I think back, and I was watching that game as well. I thought back to myself, you know, sort of almost like what we occasionally talk about with 9/11. Like, where 20 years ago, I was in middle school when Tom Brady started. And to think about what he's been able to accomplish now, I'm 33 and an elected county official, to think about what he's been able to accomplish, and I've said this on my program before, I think it's really such a great American story of hard work, determination, grit, never giving up, never settling. I mean, he could have retired after that Falcons Super Bowl, and he would have been the greatest of all time, undisputed. Yet he still keeps on because he's never settled. He's never finished. And I think I know I've personally, as best as I can, tried to really emulate Thomas Edward Patrick Brady Jr.
So before we go any further, so we were going to have a guest on from ESPN Southwest Florida, but unfortunately a schedule conflict kind of pushed it off. So Pete Shepard may try to call in at the top of the hour. No guarantees. So as fortunate as I am to have many a friend who are willing to come and talk on the microphone and chat, and especially talk about this, we have a good friend who actually works for a radio station up the dial, but he also is the fantastic voice at Gillette Stadium when it comes to your New England Revolution. I also believe your New England Patriots. We have the one and only Mike Riley, the Sarge, is joining us. Mike, how are you?
Hey, guys. I love Shep, and you know what? It's nice to know I'm a consolation prize compared to him.
You are never. I will tell you, though, that my stepson was with me last night, and I actually texted you because I'm like, I'm listening, and I'm like, oh, my God. Because how many times would I see you?
Nice, you?
The Brockton Rocks games and how fantastic of job you would do there, and you thank are you. Dude, you're awesome.
Thank you. And Kev, honestly, I really do appreciate that kind text during the game last night. That was when you get nice positive notes like that, it's something that just keeps the energy flowing and really gets your game up. So I do appreciate that. That was very nice of you, as always.
But you are ultimately kept so many. There's so many different promotions and things that are going on, and you got to call what's going on. I mean, how do you keep it all straight and sound so professional?
So I'm one of two PA guys for the Patriots games. The down and distance, my good friend John Rook, he's been doing about 30 years there.
Wow.
So he'll do the call. Yeah, he'll do all the, you know, Mac Jones's pass complete to Jacoby Myers' first down. He does that. What I'll do is, like you said, the promotional things. I'll introduce the national anthem. I'll introduce the cheerleaders, the commercial reads and all that. And, you know, here's the thing, Kev. Like, I go back to that first game of the year when the Patriots played the Miami Dolphins, and it was kind of like a real somber mode because we had four moment of silences. One for Johanny Rosario, who had just passed away. She was one of the 13 Marines killed in Afghanistan. And then David Patton, who was the other one that passed away? Sam Bam Cunningham.
Oh, yeah.
And there was, right? It was all in that same week there. Sure. So when you ask that question, like, how do you keep it all there? Just like a read like that in a situation like that where it's just so sympathetic, you have to have the particular tone of a delivery. Yeah. But then when you're introducing the cheerleaders, you can't be somber. So you have to really get in the zone right there to keep everyone's energy going in a situation like that and just adapt on the fly, be ready to go.
So how do you keep the fanboy in you contained as you watch, as you're kind of watching as the action, but also doing your job as you're expected to do as a Patriot?
Yeah, so I mean, a lot of people in the control room there are in the organization, and a couple of them are within ownership, if you will, and they are obviously cheering for the Patriots too. So it's kind of a, you know, if you're in the press box, you guys know about, you know about the press box too. Yep. When you're mm-hmm. on the laptop and everything, yeah, there's no cheering. Yeah, exactly, no cheering in the press box. But in this situation here where it's a control room, you're working for the team, it's a little different, more of a wild card situation. So it's kind of cool in that sense. So, you know, you can't scream at the top of your lungs, but still, you could be excited to a point, but you got to keep that level of professionalism there as well.
And as I should have done earlier, joining me as part of this conversation, we have Jared Valenzuela. Jared, also a radio host here on 95.9 WATD, heard every Wednesday night, the JV team, from 6:15 to 7 o'clock. Did you have a question, Jared?
Yeah, I was just going to ask.
Jared?
How are you, Sarge?
I'm good, buddy. I'm good.
I'm great. So how do you, how, so for me, like Tom Brady has meant an awful lot, as I was opining before you came on. Yeah. I know, and I've done programs as well, and I how do you, to Kevin's point, how do you keep that in there? What were your feelings or emotions? Like I think before you got on the line, I quipped that it sort of didn't feel real. Like you had COVID, no fans at Gillette, Cam Newton, so you couldn't go to a game. You couldn't really experience not having Tom Brady. It was sort of an abstract thing that found its way to culminating this week. And I guess I'll ask a two-part question. One, how did you feel heading into last night? And then how do you feel today? I know me personally, I felt really, it felt so uplifting to see Belichick hug Brady. Yep. And to hear about that 20-minute meeting. But I just want to kind of, like, your emotions being at Gillette as often as you are and the work you do for the Patriots, what it was like for you leading into the week, and then how you feel today, the day after.
Well, you know, it's funny you said that, Jared, with the last year COVID without a crowd. I mean, we're still going through COVID, as we know, but restrictions have been lifted a little more. And everything with last year there and Tom Brady gone, you got to remember that Tom Brady left the Patriots to join the Tampa Bay Buccaneers just days into COVID.
Right.
So, right? And it was like, that was the beginning of the whole thing. So kind of, for me personally, it's like, all right, we went through a real dark phase as a universe here with COVID and so forth. Tom Brady leaves at the start of it. And it's almost like kind of went full circle in a way where we're not at the end, but we're close to it. So it's nice to see him back on his home field where he started and, you know, with the team who he was with and everything. So a reunion in that sense there. When he did come back, though, like I went into the whole mindset like, all right, listen, I love Tom Brady. I was rooting for him big time last year in the Super Bowl. But if they were playing the Patriots, I'm rooting for the Patriots.
Same.
And that's just how it was last night too, yeah, right?
Absolutely.
So, you know, and I saw a lot of, you guys saw this on social media, television, everything. Some people had half Patriots jerseys and half Tampa Bay Buccaneers ones. Like, come on, you got to choose
like
a side. Yeah, choose a side. So once Brady did come out of the tunnel there, I mean, that was really cool, nice reaction to the crowd. But once that first series, it was game on, and
Absolutely. Everyone
booed, right? So that was really cool. But to your point there with the hug afterwards, that was really cool. And, you know, a loss is never good.
Right.
And I'm not putting sugarcoating anything here, but I will say this. I feel a lot better about last night's loss than last week's loss.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Right? 1,000%.
Yeah, it might be a shot in the arm.
So I was able to videotape with my cell phone. I was able, when Tom came out of the throng, came out of the visitor's entrance and, you know, ran down the sideline and, you know, people were cheering. He did the, you know, LFG and, you know, you know, throwing his fist. And then shortly after, Mac Jones came out, and I was pleasantly surprised.
It was louder.
That it was louder. Yeah, it was louder. I'm like, yes. Big pop. It was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, big pop for Mac. And, you know, and that's what's really been cool this year for him, where he's in a great position as a rookie, but then you have the crowd behind you to support you like that and just be in that situation. He's in a really good position to have the fan base on his side. He also came into a really good spot where, you know, Cam Newton, that's a very difficult position to be the guy after Tom Brady. Right. And we know how, right? So in that situation there, just things didn't pan out. So everything worked, fell into place with Mac Jones. And he looks great, though, Bo. He had a great game last night. He outplayed Tom Brady.
I was going to say, he outplayed better than Brady last night.
Yeah, he's on his way. So this guy is going to be a big boy in the NFL. I think he's going to be one of the premier quarterbacks in the next couple of years.
You know, I got to tell you, and you could either you could tell me if I'm right or wrong here, but I want to say that he had, and this could be heresy as a football fan, but he had Peyton Manning-esque tendencies last night. He reminded me a bit of Peyton Manning. Am I wrong here, guys?
No, I think that's a pretty good assessment, Kevin. And to what you just said, too, Sarge, like, I think for someone like Mac Jones in his fourth ever NFL start to walk on Sunday Night Football, the premier matchup against the defending Super Bowl champions that just happens to be quarterbacked by the legendary greatest of all time of the team you now play for of 20 years. And he matched him. He went toe for toe.
Yes.
He beat him in terms of the stat book. To your point about Peyton, yeah, I think he did. He had the mannerisms, the hurry up with the clapping and the audibling. And I think, and to some degree, I mean, he completed 19 straight passes. And I walked out of there. I was in on Mac Jones.
Yeah.
Now I'm sold.
Yeah.
And I agree. And last night is what finally sold.
And this kid, if this was the game that he was going to release bodily fluids down his leg, this would be right.
And he rose to the occasion instead.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. This was the Mac Jones coming out party.
Oh, absolutely.
And right. And the other thing too is that I think has been an underrated part of conversation for everything in general. I know the Patriots are 1-3, but you also have to take into consideration here too that the preseason was cut down to 3 games.
Yeah. Right.
And I think that was a big factor here going into the season, where a lot of new guys just, you know, didn't have too much time to gel with one another. As we know, that third preseason game, traditionally when you had the 4, was always the unofficial dress rehearsal. The 4th was, you know, last chance for the cuts. You didn't have that this year. So, you know, that first game there, Miami, everyone gelling together as it was. And, yeah, they could have won that game, definitely. But it's just like, and Belichick has unofficially said in so many words that the first 3-4 games of the season are an extension of the preseason. I think we just had that, and now it's game on.
What'd you think of the defense, Mike? I thought there was some good gelling last night. Judon looks worth every penny. I golf clapped when he sacked Brady. I was like, oh, that's great. And then it's Tom Brady. He got sacked.
And Brady was pissed about that.
Yeah, he was. He was, because he tapped him on the shoulder right after, and Brady was not happy.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you there. Judon, he was the catalyst of that defense last night. And, you know, last week, in a situation where I thought the linebackers absolutely failed.
Oh, absolutely.
Right, going up the likes of Alvin Kamara, and it just couldn't stop anyone, really, in the Saints. They kind of gelled a little bit here, I thought, the linebackers. But definitely Judon was huge. Jonathan Jones got burned a couple times. So we got to keep an eye on that secondary there. I mean, they really do miss Gilmore.
Oh, yeah.
You really do. And it's too bad he's going to be out until after the Dallas game with the IR. So, or PUP, rather, excuse me. So, you know, that's a little disappointing. He won't be in there to that one. But overall, I think this was a masterful Belichick game plan. Yep. And it was a chess match. And I think he outsmarted Brady. I really do. And that's because of the defensive core that he had there last night.
Again, if you're just tuning in, we are privileged to not only have Jared Valenzuela from the JV team in on the radio program, but we you know what? We pushed our chips in, and we have Mike Sarge Riley, just from right up the radio dial, also the voice of your New England Revolution, and also you can hear him do promotional stuff for your New England Patriots.
Yeah, you can save yourself a sentence, Kev. Just say Gillette. You can say Gillette Stadium. That's
Gillette Stadium. Yeah. So what I want to say, guys,
the stadium guy.
What's interesting?
It's okay, buddy.
Oh, yeah, you sounded awesome.
Awesome, definitely.
I appreciate it. I appreciate it.
But so what I want to ask is, this Patriots team is a mere two plays from technically being 3-1, and nobody ever wants to say that, okay? But it's also a team that's reminiscent of the 2000 Patriots, the first year Bill Belichick, when they had a string of, Bill was 5-11 and had a string of these, you know, you lost by a hand, you know, by a play, or you lost by a field goal, and it has that feeling. Is this a good feeling or a bad feeling, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, like I said before, too, like this loss feels a lot better than last week, and the Pats played up, and you could tell that Belichick really wanted that game last night. He was hard on the refs. He really wanted that game. But to your point there, for the 2000 year, his first year, 5-11, and losing one possession games and just tight ones. I could see that happening too a little more often than not, Kev, like we have seen so far the first four games, because just new faces. I think that the stat was, I want to say 33 players had never played with each other up until the first game, right? So, because look at all the free agents they got in the offseason and the rookies and everything.
Yep.
That's a big factor right there. So I could see that happening, but the other advantage that goes in their favor here is that you do have 17 games now. You do.
Right. True.
And the Pats bye week, it's not until December. So they're going to have a lot of bonding time here over the next 2 months up until that bye week. Just hope they stay healthy, right?
Right. And get a good break at a good time of the season. And you know, Kevin invokes the 2000 season. I'm starting to feel, and I don't want to go too far afield here, almost 2001 when they started 1-3 behind a untested and unproven quarterback. Of course, Tom Brady a little less heralded back then than Mac Jones is.
Lewis, I owe you a Christmas card, I swear.
Right? But to, you know, to some degree, and you're right. I felt a whole lot better about last night. Obviously, we don't like moral victories in New England, though. So this team, Bill Belichick especially, they're going to have to start turning it around. They're going to have to start winning. And your point about the number of players, Mike, that have not played together. Yeah. You know, what did Kraft say? We used to mock teams that won, you know, the championships in March or April when free agency opens up. Yeah. He goes, and now we're kind of one of them. But I think it was necessary to bridge it. And I think, and Kraft, knock on wood, has revealed that patience. But I think it would be one thing if through these first four games, Mac Jones looked like junk and the rest of the team is okay. I thank God it's kind of the opposite. He's looked pretty darn good.
Yeah, consistent.
Consistent and really good for a rookie. And again, I think last night was a great coming out party, because I don't think it can be understated enough just everything that surrounded that game. And like Kevin just said, he could have sent it down his leg. You know, he could have pooped himself and not, and we would have really been struggling. And he rose to that occasion that, frankly, there's no other quarterback is going to ever have to do that like he did last night.
But what's crazy? Right. What's crazy though is the life's counterbalance here. And let me tell you why. Okay, Giants defeating the Saints. The winless Giants defeating the Saints, and
at the Superdome.
And the Jets get that Zach Wilson comes to life.
Of course, and I had the Titans in my pick 'em this week.
And what do we and what do we have? What do we have? A 56-yard thunk.
Yeah. So you know, that's another thing. A lot of people talking about that today. Should Belichick have gone for it on 4th-and-3?
Indianapolis, you know, 4-2.
We were. I can tell you this: the kid that sits right behind me in the booth, I looked right at him, and we both looked at each other in shock. We're like, he's kicking it? I was all for it. I had no issue with it, but we were shocked. We're like, holy cow! I thought at least try to get a first down and move it up a little more, because it was that rain, guys. That was a big factor too.
Yeah, well,
underrated.
No, I was just going to say, when I'm not listening to WATD, I occasionally tick up the dial to that other station Kevin's been referencing.
You can say it now. It's okay.
But there was, I'm stealing this take from the afternoon show, and I think it might be the right one on why Belichick didn't go for it. Suppose Mac Jones doesn't convert it, or he fumbles it, or he throws an incomplete pass. He had a couple of guys fumbling it last night.
Yeah.
Then he's the one that walks off the field, hanging his head, quasi blowing it for his team. Whereas if Nick Folk just misses the kick, it's on the kicker, it's on Belichick. And honestly, kudos to Belichick for doing that, because I don't think a lot of head coaches would have that much savvy to think, I'm going to put this kid played his rear end off tonight. He looked fantastic, and I don't want this to end on a rookie mistake, literally a rookie mistake.
And as we know, Belichick is very protective of Mac Jones. So that situation right there, and then holding his hand last week and all that. But just a little segue, no pun intended, to be a little more protective. Fix that offensive line. Please do something.
Oh, God, I mean, I know.
I'm determined Trent Brown would have played last night if it were not raining. If it didn't rain, he would have been in there. Just Isaiah Wynn, though. Come on, guys.
I know.
Get Skarnecki out of retirement, something.
I know. Fix that kind of another bad first-round pick there with Wynn.
Yeah. Yes, I know. Just something, guys. Just spice it up.
Ship him off to the Rams like you did with Sonny Michel.
Michelle's a good blocker, though.
Yeah, but he fumbled yesterday. Fumbled That's in that true. Game. It was a That's big true. Game. Big game, and the Arizona's not fooling around. They're the real deal. So we just got a couple more minutes left here, and I got to throw out just a couple more things super quick.
Please.
And that is you know, the things that were omitted, and I would be curious as to what the nature, how the game would have been, how the feel of the game would have been had we had Stephon Gilmore, if we had Rob Gronkowski. And you know what? We know that Mac Jones got clobbered a few times. I think he was sacked four times. But if you had Jason Pierre-Paul in there, oh my goodness.
Oh, yeah.
What kind of a night would it have been? Would it have been a different game? Or do you think it would have been the same game if these players were part of the mix last night, Mike?
Yeah, the Gronk thing, I think he probably would have been thrown to a few times, especially the homecoming situation. Yep. Jason Pierre-Paul as well. Look at that. That whole front line there for Tampa Bay. Patriots had, what, -1 rushing yard?
Yeah.
That was insane. So you couldn't just run the ball with them. So even if you had another guy there for the pass rush, that would have been a whole nightmare. But I think they did, with the Gilmore thing, Brady, listen, he had a good game. He had a couple of get-out-of-jail-card deep balls there. Antonio Brown, that drove everyone nuts, seeing him get these first downs after all of his off-field baloney. But Gilmore probably would have been all over him, or Godwin, one or the other. But I think the Gronk thing, he probably would have found him, his old binky, if you will, a few times, right?
Absolutely. So Jared and I have one more question, but we've got 2 minutes left, so this is going to be like a speed round, okay?
Go for it.
Yep. Jared, I'll let you ask your last question.
I'll do more of a statement than a question, Kevin, because, of course, Tom Brady last night joined 3 other quarterbacks as the only quarterback to beat all 32 teams. However, and this is likely to happen, Tom Brady will not throw a touchdown pass against all 32 teams. The Patriots will be the only team he's never thrown a touchdown pass against.
We only bring facts, right?
Fine, one little nugget.
That's a heck of a fact.
Yeah,
nice.
Right?
So, Sarge, nice. I'm going to ask you this question, and I'll give it, again, we just got a few seconds left here.
Go for it.
And it's kind of a 1A and 1B. Are the Bucs still a Super Bowl contender in the NFC? And B, do the Patriots still have a shot at the playoffs this year, or is it a rebuilding year?
Super Bowl contender, for the Bucs, but I still think they're overrated. I'm not buying into them to get back there. I think the Rams are the team in the NFC, the top guys to take down. And look at the Cardinals now, too. But the Patriots, listen, my hot take before this was that they would find a way into the AFC Championship. I'm going to pump the brakes on that just a little bit.
Bills.
I think they'll Buffalo scares me, but I think the Pats will get a wild card.
I've been saying 10-7, and I'll be happy with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've said that since August.
Listen, Mike, I got to thank you for coming off the bench
and
joining us. I'm sorry we couldn't get a little wrestling in, but that'll be the next call I make to you, because we got to talk CM Punk and a whole bunch of other things soon.
I'd love to talk wrestling with you any day that ends in a Y.
Excellent. There he is. The one and only Mike Riley. Thank you, Mike. And I want to thank you, Jared.
Thank
for
you, Kevin. Always a pleasure to be on the Monday Night Talk with you, sir.
Being part of the TV and segment.
Tom Brady, of course.
Oh, my God. That's all the show we have until next week at 6:15 p.m. Have a great evening.
WATD-FM Marshfield. WBMS.